The T-Biz Podcast delivers tea news that you need to know. A recap of the week's major headlines with commentary and cultural trends hosted by Dan Bolton. It is the voice of origin for tea professionals and enthusiasts worldwide.
Tea nourishes and inspires. It is an ancient plant-based medicine that simultaneously heals and energizes the body as it soothes the mind. Making fine tea is a blend of artistry and craftsmanship. The $200 billion tea trade is fundamentally local, yet exerts global influence, employing millions to enhance the well-being of all. Hello, everyone. Here are this week's headlines. Tariff uncertainty troubles the tea industry. Kenya appoints a task force to eliminate tea surplus, and developed nations pledge $300 billion for climate mitigation. Plus, frugal innovation on the farm. Capital-intensive advances in agricultural technology, ag tech, are altering the efficiency and economics of cultivation. However, unlike commodity food crops, tea remains stubbornly labor-intensive. Tea plants are long-lived and require extensive infrastructure, including drainage improvements, flood protection, terracing, and planting shade trees. Field work involves heavy fertilizer use, four-year pruning cycles, uprooting old stock, and maintaining extensive paths and access roads. Harvest rounds yielding 50 or fewer kilos of green leaf per worker occur every 8 to 10 days during much of the year. Abhijit Hazarika, the former head of tea process innovation at Tata Global Beverages, explains that because every aspect of tea production is labor-intensive, tea is on the threshold of transformation, as mechanization and automation demonstrate. Since capital is limited and the return on investment is not substantial, Hazarika has made himself a champion of frugal innovation. More in a minute, but first, this important message.
What happens when businesses along the tea supply chain get together and support women and children in tea communities? The Mother and Child-Friendly Seal for Responsible Business is creating long-term positive impacts, making your cup of Ceylon tea all the sweeter. Learn more at srilanka-motherandchildseal.org.
President-elect Donald Trump announced this week that he would sign an executive order instituting a 25% tariff on all Canadian and Mexican goods on his first day in office in January. Mexico will retaliate in response to U.S. tariffs. Canada is weighing its options. The Washington Post writes that proposed tariffs could have a, quote, seismic effect, end quote, changing the playing field for local producers and other nations that trade with the U.S. They could also result in retaliatory tariffs against U.S. businesses. Details are not known, but cross-border tea ventures with a large U.S. customer base could suffer in the highly competitive U.S. tea market. Montreal-based wholesaler Metropolitan Tea has a sizable U.S. client list, and David's Tea, also based in Montreal, retails to many U.S. consumers. Shabnam Weber, president of the Tea and Herbal Association of Canada, told TBiz, quote, "It's a big number. Nobody was prepared for that. Although the economists have been speculating on 10%, which would result in market contraction of our GDP anywhere between 1 and 5%. That's a really big deal. I think there are tea companies that will definitely be hurt, but in the grand scheme, we don't export a lot of tea to the U.S., end quote. Through September 2024, the U.S. exported 15.5 million kilos of tea to Canada, a 40% increase compared to the same period in 2023. Value increased by 10% to 77.5 million during the period January through September. In 2019, the U.S. exported $130 million worth of tea to Canada, a five-year high. Tea exports to Canada were $96 million in 2023, continuing a downward trend. Quote, most of our teas are either packed in the U.S. or the U.K., and the U.S. is the biggest. So if we reciprocate as we did on steel and aluminum in 2018, that's going to cause a big ripple. That's the bigger concern, end quote, said Weber. Canada is the 17th largest importer of tea in the world, importing $138 million in 2022. According to Statista Market Insights, the market is estimated at $1.72 billion, of which $1.22 billion is out of home. The OECD lists India as the second largest trading partner with $19.6 billion in trade. The UK is third with $17 million. China is fourth with $12.8 million, and Japan ranks fifth at $10.5 million. High tariffs will dampen sales by Canadian tea exporters to the U.S., but a retaliatory tariff on U.S. imports would likely lead Canadian consumers to choose new suppliers from secondary trading partners, especially India, the UK, and China. Kenya appointed a 21-member task force to dispose of 100 million kilos of unsold tea quickly. The tea is valued at approximately 32 billion shillings. That's 250 million in U.S. dollars. Agricultural Cabinet Secretary Andrew Karanja instructed the public-private tea stakeholders to investigate the underlying causes and propose short- and long-term solutions. Low sales result from favorable weather, government-imposed auction minimum prices, logistical disruptions tied to the ongoing Red Sea crisis, inept factory management, unfair supply chain policies, and unscrupulous brokers engaged in what has been described as unethical practices. Small growers receive monthly payments based on the amount of tea they harvest, but do not earn a year-end bonus on unsold tea. Deputy President Kithure Kindiki promised to, quote, correct the market misfortunes affecting tea farmers. Their livelihoods depend on our actions, end quote, he said. The surplus is carried over from two harvest years and far exceeds normal stocks that total 40 million kilos globally. The unprecedented quantity is overflowing factories and warehouses in Mombasa and producing regions. Kenya annually harvests about 600 million kilos of tea from greenleaf plucked by 800,000 tea farmers. The surplus has also affected auction prices that remain well below the government's suspended minimum reserve price of $2.43 per kilo. Kenya tea is currently selling well below neighboring Rwanda, where auction prices top $4 per kilo. The task force, chaired by Nicholas Bunyikaga, was empowered with regulatory authority, policy assessment, and recommendations for a plan of action. Its 14 members and 6-member secretariat were also tasked with a performance review of the Kenya Tea Development Agency, KTDA, factories. The task force has 60 days to submit findings. The United Nations closed the somewhat fractious COP29 climate conference in Baku, Azerbaijan, with developed countries agreeing to contribute $300 billion annually to developing countries by 2035. The sum is $200 billion greater than the $100 billion per year pledged in 2009. When combined with private fund pledges, developing countries could receive $1.3 trillion in assistance. The conference was largely dominated by financial negotiations centered on providing developing countries with funds to mitigate climate change impacts. Several tea-producing countries in East Africa and Asia qualify for assistance. Inger Andersen, Executive Director of the United Nations Environment Program, praised delegates for securing a, quote, foundation on which we must now rapidly build. However, we must be clear. Ambition and promises are only as good as the action and delivery that backs them up, end quote. During the conference, scientists predicted that 2024 would be the hottest year in the past 125,000 years on Earth. Average temperatures exceeded 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels in 2024. Failure to control emissions could increase temperatures by 2.6 to 3.1 degrees Celsius this century, with disastrous results. Delegate countries must cut emissions by 42% by 2030 to limit warming, according to the 2024 edition of the UN's Emissions Gap Report. The two-week event was attended by 70,000 world leaders, negotiators, observers, and activists. It is the second largest COP gathering after COP28 in Dubai, UAE. President-elect Donald Trump announced that the U.S. would withdraw from the Paris Accords prior to the event, but no other nation said the same. And now, a word from this week's sponsor.
Hello, I'm Bogdan, a passionate tea drinker and the inventor of the ultimate tea machine, the Brewmaker One. Preparation is key to making fine tea. Sequential steepings deliver the best taste possible and unlock the true value of whole leaf teas and botanicals. Brew automates that process without using any pots or capsules. This simple-to-operate smartphone-controlled device stores steeping profiles to consistently make great tea at the push of a button. Brew also reduces time, waste, and energy. That's because I engineered the Brew to remember control settings for temperature, brewing time, and quantity. Using my patented process lets you stack steeps simply and conveniently.
Capital-intensive advances in agricultural technology, ag tech, are altering the efficiency and economics of cultivation. However, unlike commodity food crops, tea remains stubbornly labor-intensive. Tea plants are long-lived and require extensive infrastructure, including drainage improvements, flood protection, terracing, and planting shade trees. Field work involves heavy fertilizer use, four-year pruning cycles, uprooting old stock, and maintaining extensive paths and access roads. Harvest rounds yielding 50 or fewer kilos of green leaf per worker occur every 8 to 10 days during much of the year. Abhijit Hazarika, the former head of tea process innovation at Tata Global Beverages, explains that because every aspect of tea production is labor-intensive, tea is on the threshold of transformation, as mechanization and automation demonstrate. Since capital is limited and the return on investment is not substantial, Hazarika has made himself a champion of frugal innovation. Abhijit Hazarika began his career in tea in the early 1980s in the Calcutta saleroom at Brooke Bond Limited. He joined Tata Tea in 1991 and worked in tea buying and blending in Guwahati, Bangalore, and Kolkata for 18 years before moving to London, where he worked for nearly 7 years in product management and supply management for Tata Global Beverages. He has a home in Bangalore and has worked as a tea and process innovation consultant at Tea Sigma Consultancy based in Assam for 5 years. 3 years ago, Abhijit leased a small farm and factory at Bornoi, Assam, to conduct practical experiments on increasing tea productivity. The 8 staff members, including the factory manager, produce more than 700,000 kilos of made-to-order tea sold directly to wholesalers. He explains that labor accounts for 60% of the typical estate's operating expense, and the labor cost is increasing. quote, input costs are going to keep on increasing. The only way to neutralize this is to increase productivity and efficiency on the farm. What is the driving force behind your pursuit of frugal innovation in tea? What motivates you?
My grandmother was probably the first woman planter in the history of Assam. So she used to run a tea garden called Korangani. And my grandfather actually, cleared jungles to be able to create around four gardens in his time. My family has always been in tea from my mother's side. And so I have grown up among people who were passionate about tea, people who lived their life in tea. And I drew a lot of inspiration from my grandmother, who, you know, at that time used to actually go to the factory with, gumboots and being able to walk in the rain and stuff like that. And it always left an impression that, you know, that there's so much, you know, you can do if you really want to. And, you know, there's nothing that holds you back. My uncle is also looked after the garden, and both those were, in my view, great innovators of their time, although they are probably not spoken about. And they did a lot of work in the tea garden. I have been in tea for, nearly four decades. So what I am today is only because of tea. And I think, you know, whatever little I can give back, you know, to tea, I am always trying to see the opportunity. There are probably very few people who have seen the different parts of tea, the commercial aspects of tea, more than anything else. And also seeing, having the opportunity to work in big organizations who have actually driven, you know, you can use the word IT, to actually benefit from, from the power of technology. So all that together, I think, makes a combination which makes it interesting for me to look at tea not as a problem, but as an opportunity. And to see how, we could actually, make even one life better. And I think that itself is my motivation, that, let's make one day better.
What are the most effective applications of technology in tea cultivation?
If you put a problem statement, what is the most important thing to change in tea? I would think it is, number one, the ability to reduce the number of people in the entire process. I think that's the biggest one. But you have to do it in such a way that, it is not harmful in any way. You are not depriving anybody of what they were entitled to because they were born in an estate or they lived in an estate. But at the same time, in order to make their lives better, you have to change status quo, because otherwise it's just going downhill.
At Bornoy, workers using the experimental electronic harvester you are developing with RoboSix Labs harvest far more green leaf per day than pluckers working on surrounding farms.
An average plucking of around 27 to 28 kgs per worker, you have to make it go up to at least 300 kgs. You know, that's the only way you'll be able to maintain your garden. Technology has to start in the field in terms of harvesting. Because without that, your cost of production in no way can come down. The second use of technology, of course, is use of better ways of monitoring the garden. Now it could be drones, it could be a lot of other aerial surveillances. And we need to understand that, there is really so much you can spend, on an estate, because it's not cost optimum, you're back to square A. Actually, apart from, the obvious advantages of harvesting, I think in terms of, the ability for technology to bring in, surveillance. And I think surveillance, whether it is aerial, whether it is, anything else, to be able to actually bring down some of the other costs related to pest attacks and stuff like that. Interesting areas which are developing, but in my view, they are very expensive as of now. And, because given the last large areas which are under tea, I think there has to become a time when, you know, something more frugal needs to be done. Just looking at drones or, you know, just looking at satellite images is good, but I think there would have to become something much more cost effective because the area is very large. In the way that we do manufacture, I think there are a lot of variables which, you know, one needs to, take care of. And that's where probably, you know, technology will help us. But in my own experience, when we have been running factories, I think every aspect of manufacture is so closely related that in many cases that, you know, it is not possible to actually get the right flow in an optimized way to be able to, you know, give you the best product at the lowest cost. For example, even a small thing like the feed rate, you know, into your CTC, you know, could actually impact the way your CFMs run, how your dryers run. And, one thing I think which is probably not, you know, evident is the lack of technical training that you can give your workers who run the factory. I'm not talking about the people on maintenance and all. I'm talking about the daily people who come to actually run the factory for you. There is so much of variation among people that, you know, that to get a standardized process as we know it, you know, is very, very difficult. So technology does have an important role to play in every aspect of the, but again, the cost has to be within something that is disproportionate in terms of, the benefits that it is able to bring in. And I think that's the riddle which, you know, only frugal innovation can actually help because, you know, doing, high cost, changes will never pay off for a commodity which has always been marketed as, you know, poor man's drink. And that's going to be the problem.
You mentioned steady progress in improving the electronic tea harvester, which is now undergoing field trials.
The challenges is in terms of the overall deployment of mandate or say workers in the field and how you are able to reduce the cost. And we worked for 4 years and ran into major disasters, you know, in the first 3 years because we were trying to do something which worked within the lanes between two bushes and not go over the bush because that was the only way we could reduce cost. We wanted to, you know, bring in the latest technology in terms of electronics so that, you know, we were able to, you know, make it future-proof because in our view, having something which was probably mechanical was outdated to start with. And therefore, we went and tried. And everything was done in-house in terms of design and, you know, manufacturing the components, etc. So I think this year has been a good year for us in terms of trials. We've been able to cover about 1 hectare in 8 hours. And of course, output will depend on what is on the bush. So, you know, output is not important. It's just our aim is to get to 0.15 hectares per hour on a normal speed. And for that, a bit of work to be done in terms of small things like, you know, when we did a study, we found that the number of times we were changing the bags as compared to a worker using a harvester was probably 5x more. I mean, it's a very small thing, but, you know, actually it is costing us a lot of time on the ground. We have been learning every year and, you know, I think as a person, very confident that this will work. Now, whether it's a commercial success or not, I think is not something I want to think about, but it has really taught us a lot. if you are going to have a Fugel machine like this, a Fugel means as compared to, you know, anything else which is available, and you can reduce the number of man days but get better or equally good output, I think there is a future. And I was thinking more in terms of using this machine for agri entrepreneurs in Assam. You know, my dream and is that if we could take educated youth and make them into agri entrepreneurs using this machine, using drones, using sensors, and servicing the small growers' farms, where, you know, the small grower did not have to worry about anything because, you know, the agri entrepreneurs were taking care of the entire back end process, then I think it would bring in two major changes. One is it would bring in, you know, standardized quality, because, you know, these agri entrepreneurs would have been trained or could be trained rather than training 500 small growers. And secondly, I think it will reduce the migration of educated and talented youth from the villages of Assam or West Bengal, you know, to very mundane paying jobs in big cities, which I think is a huge loss of talent for a state. So for me, I think those are the two most important success factors if it ever came true. It's not so much of the commercial earnings.
The relentless focus on improving yield to increase volume has been challenged. Will you address whether improving tea quality pays off for the people who do the work? Is the additional effort being rewarded?
We had, you know, taken a bottling factory on lease, you know, for about 2 years with the express purpose of trying to improve, you know, the earnings of the small tea growers by improving the quality of the tea that we made, and therefore also encouraging them to, you know, follow good manufacturing, good agricultural practices, and making the factory also follow good manufacturing processes. Now, we did improve, you know, the leaf quality. We did improve the, you know, the quality of the made tea. But then I think, the gap is so small between, you know, making a good tea and the best tea and getting the best price and the medium price that, you know, it's a gamble and it may not always pay off. So, you know, the amount of expenditure that you make in trying to move from, you know, what I call as a B index tea to an A index tea may not always pay off in terms of the final price that you realize. That's been my experience over the last 2 years. That is something that one needs to be very careful about. Because one thing is very clear, that you cannot sacrifice volume, you know, and just look at just, you know, the variable cost. So, you know, that is the biggest challenge that anybody who is in tea realizes day in, day out. And the second is, I think, the cash flow. I think one of the biggest problems in the tea industry is the cash flow. Like a small tea grower has to be paid within, you know, say 14 days or 7 days or whatever you've got an agreement with. But, you know, you as a producer or a factory owner will not get paid within, you know, more than 21 days. And that's where, you know, cash flow becomes one of the biggest challenges that, you know, that you need to manage. There are so many of these problems, but, you know, when you are addressing them one by one, you begin to realize that, you know, everything is so interconnected that, you know, there is no one solution to this entire thing. And I think everybody is looking at one solution, but that's going to be very difficult.
I admire your factory experiment addressing the daily problems of tea cultivation. Every process can be improved and made more efficient and economical, but persistently low prices at the farm gate undermine that effort. In tea, the upper end of the supply chain is still not compensating the lower end for their work.
The way I can speak specifically for India at large, because I spent most of my time as a buyer blender in India, and I have seen quality evolve in India over a period of time. So if you looked at India, say, when I started my career, at that point of time, there was a huge amount of tea, which was what we call as loose tea or unbranded tea, right? Even now, you know, 400 million kgs of tea approximately would be in the unbranded segment, what we call as the general trade, or, you know, what we call as the local buyers play a huge influence. Now, the way I have seen, you know, brands panning out over the last 2-3 decades that I have been closely associated with, is that, you know, that while there was a lot of interest among the big players in, you know, capturing value at the, you know, medium or the top end of the pyramid, I think over the last maybe 10, 15 years, everybody has begun to realize that the volume lies at the bottom. And so, you know, there has been a huge amount of, you know, branded activity now happening at the bottom of the pyramid. And majority of the shares of very large companies are actually coming from that. And that's a reality because, you know, the fact is that the market will be determined by what people are not only willing to pay, but also able to pay. Okay, so if you look at, you know, it's very nice and very heartening when people talk about, you know, value. But people need to realize that many of the people, for them, tea still is a luxury, okay? Because they can't really afford to drink tea by sacrificing something else, okay? So they will always look for value. Now, for them, value is, in many cases, not taste. It is not something, it is something that's probably just having, you know, a tea which fulfills the basic need.
Intrigued by what you heard in today's podcast? Would you like to learn more from our global network of TBiz journalists and tea experts? Remember to visit the TBiz website for more comprehensive coverage. That's www.t-biz.com. Thanks for listening. Farewell till next week.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.